you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Ricky's boys don't quit, and neither does NBC Sports Chicago's coverage. Download the My Teams app by NBC Sports and get your White Sox anytime, anywhere. Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox. Members FDIC.
White Sox! White Sox! Go! Go! White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark!
You can't put it on the ball!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
Lever's ready to work now to Don Baylor. And it's a high fly ball. It should be playable. Nichols is moving over. Nichols is there. The ball game is over. Seaver has won 300. He has become the 17th man in the history of baseball to win 300 games.
He's a 40-year-old man, but this is a game for kids. And that kid is a very, very happy individual. He has done what only 16 others have accomplished. And this crowd is still on its feet with cheers for Tom Seaver.
Ah, yes, Tom Seaver winning his 300th career game in a White Sox uniform back in 1985. Hey, everyone, Chuck Garfine here. You're listening to the White Sox Talk Podcast brought to you by Wintrust. And, you know, baseball is a game for kids. There's a kid in all of us who grew up watching and or playing baseball. And with the news that Tom is suffering from dementia and is retiring from public life, the kid in me is feeling the effects of it in a profound way, because I was there at Yankee Stadium that day, August 4th, 1985. My grandfather took me from Chicago to New York to watch the White Sox play a game at Yankee Stadium. We planned it for weeks, and as it turned out, it ended up being the game that Seaver won his 300th career game. And that has always stayed with me for years and years and years. And here in the podcast, I'm going to share some of my memories of that day. I'm going to talk to former White Sox second baseman Brian Little. Remember Brian Little? He was in the starting lineup that day, played second base. He drove in two of the Sox four runs that day. I'll also share a bunch of tweets I received from White Sox fans who were either there or have memories of watching it on TV or hearing it on the radio. And by the way, thanks to Sox fan Mark Harper, who gave me the idea to do a podcast on Seaver today. So a special shout out to him. But first, some thoughts about Tom Seaver. You know, he's always going to be known as a Met. He played 12 years with the Mets, 6 years with the Reds, and then 2.5 with the White Sox. Those years were 1984, 1985, and then in half of 86. He pitched 20 years. He won three Cy Youngs, 311 wins total. Over 3,600 strikeouts, 61 shutouts. In 1992, he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame by the highest percentage of votes ever recorded at the time, 98.84%. So how did the White Sox get him? All right, so there's some interesting trivia surrounding him. And actually, Chris Kamka chimed in with some stats. I'll get to that eventually, too. But how about this? January 20th, 1984, the White Sox claimed Seaver from the Mets in a free agent compensation draft, as they called it. The Mets had incorrectly assumed that no one would pursue the 39-year-old starter who was making a little over $1 million a year, which was a lot of money at the time, and they left him unprotected. Well, the Sox took him. This was after they won the division in 1983, and he was great in 84. He went 15-11. He led the team in wins. You'd think if you add a Tom Seaver in that kind of season to the 83 squad, they'd win the division again, but that was a disastrous year. They went 74-88. Lamar Hoyt wasn't the same. A lot of the guys weren't the same as they were the year before, so that's a whole other story. But now to the game itself. In New York, there were over 54,000 fans. Myself, my grandfather, known as Papa Joe Garfine, a former President Richard Nixon was at the game. And as the game went on and Seaver stayed in there, first off, there were a lot of Mets fans that showed up, but also Yankees fans started chanting, "Seaver, Seaver." And I remember, I'll never forget this, I got the sense of the enormity of the game when a fan or a few fans hung this massive, massive sign over the first base upper deck railing that said three simple words: "Tom is God." And when they hung it, all these Yankees fans were booing because there was still that, obviously, clearly that rivalry between the Yankees and the Mets. At one point, Seaver retired 10 batters in a row. The Yankees managed only 6 hits for the game, all singles. Tom Seaver, at 40 years old, went the distance. 9 innings, only gave up 1 run. That team, that squad, had Dave Winfield, Don Mattingly, Ricky Henderson was leading off. I don't think Ricky got a hit. Actually, let me check here. I'm pretty sure he did not get a hit in that game. He went 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Mattingly went 2 for 4. Dave Winfield went 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Willie Randolph went 0 for 3. Tony La Russa was ejected from the game by Darryl Cousins for vehemently protesting an out call at home plate in the 6th inning. So he wasn't even there. Well, he was in the clubhouse, but he wasn't on the field when Seaver won the game. By the way, the final score of this game was White Sox 4, Yankees 1. Seaver wore number 41 for his whole career. How about that? So I took my grandfather. My grandfather took me. I was a little kid, a little teenager. He knew how much I loved the White Sox. My grandfather saw Babe Ruth play at Comiskey Park. He saw Carl Hubble pitch at Wrigley Field. My grandfather used to tell the story. He was at dinner one night in Chicago. Who walks in? Al Capone. Al Capone walked in and paid for everybody's meals. It was kind of like a glorified soup kitchen. It wasn't like a really nice restaurant, but almost like a diner, I would say. But yeah, my grandfather saw some things in his life. So Seaver went the distance. He struck out 7, ended the game with a Don Baylor fly out to Reed Nichols and left, and then bedlam ensued on the field. And you know, this is a big deal. You know, was a big deal back then. And if you saw it, experienced it, I mean, I was a young kid, and here's this 40-year-old guy winning his 300th game, and it just stuck with me and still does. You know, and I, you know, why does that mean so much? I think when you're young, especially, and a big thing happens on a baseball field, it involves your family, like your grandfather, your father, someone, or your mother, and you share that, it stays with you forever. And even though my grandfather passed away, he actually passed away in May of 05. He didn't see the White Sox win a World Series. My grandfather lived to be 95 years old. He lived in the United States for most of it. Never saw the White Sox win the World Series. He missed out by a few months. So I carry all these memories, all these White Sox memories, Chicago sports memories, and this one, Seaver. And I know a lot of you out there have some similar memories of this game, and I'll get to that in a moment. But first, let's hear from Brian Little. So Brian Little is a special instructor for the White Sox. He's been with the organization since 2001 as a scout or instructor. He's here in Arizona working, and he played for the White Sox back in 1985. He was in the starting lineup. He was playing second base. I had a chance to speak with Brian Little at Camelback Ranch here today. So here's some thoughts about Tom Seaver from Brian Little. All right, so Brian, I got the scorecard right here, the lineup. You batted second that day on Tom Seaver Day. But before we get into the lineup, what was it like in the ballpark that day knowing that Seaver was going for number 300?
Full house. Anytime you were playing in Yankee Stadium, it was going to be full in an afternoon game, and just a special moment to play behind Tom and do everything you possibly can to help him win that 300th game.
He went the distance. He was 40. What kind of specimen was he, even at 40 years old, as being a pitcher? He won 16 games in 1985.
You know, he was always in he did everything. In between starts, he always kept himself going. He caught ground balls at shortstop sometimes with the infielders. And, I mean, it's just a way to keep his body going, keep himself loose. And, it was amazing. It really was. And for him to go the distance, I know, if I remember correctly, like in the sixth or seventh inning, he made a couple big pitches to get out of big, you know, tough spots with some guys on base, and managed to stay in there and finish the game. It was just remarkable.
In that lineup for the Yankees, they had Ricky Henderson, Dave Winfield, Don Mattingly. Some future Hall of Famers were in that lineup that day.
That's right. Really good lineup, and just amazing. Just amazing feat. And we had Pudge behind the plate and Harold out in right field, and guys, a bunch of other guys on the field, and Walker was playing first base. I mean, what decent lineup! But boy, look at Mr. Littles up there at second base, playing, hitting in a two hole. I don't know what the manager was thinking that day. But
the manager was that La Russa?
That was La Russa. Yeah, it was. You know what? It worked out for sure, because I ended up driving in a couple runs, and just a fun day for sure.
Rudy Law led off in left field. Reed Nichols came in for him. Then you batted second. You drove in two runs, had two walks, and then La Russa took you out for Fletcher.
Yeah, what's he thinking right there? And this guy's a Hall of Fame manager? That's what I can't figure out.
Right, can I ask you, since you brought up a manager, what did Billy Martin used to say?
Well, Billy, you know, as everyone knows, I bunted three-quarters of the time I went to home plate, and I was bunting all the time or trying to walk. And Billy Martin yelled out of the dugout one day, said, "Heads up, he might swing." I missed my chance to go in there and start the biggest brawl in New York history. I could have went over there and just had a blast with Billy Martin for sure.
But when you look at what Seaver did in his career, how special of a pitcher was he?
He was. He was the endurance, the just being able to go out there and finish games off and go the distance, and like the old school guys did back in the day, and just a tremendous, tremendous competitor.
Yeah. And you hear about, you know, what he's going through. I mean, that's got to be tough for anybody, because in the game, because it's a fraternity, and here's a Hall of Famer who played the game right, and, you know, he's struggling now in his life.
You're exactly right. Anytime guys in this fraternity, and especially the guys that you've played with and been a part of and been in that locker room with them, and it's special. Know his family, and it's just a tough thing. It's just tough to deal with.
Yeah. Well, being a part of this game, for you, where did that rank for you in terms of memories and biggest games you were a part of? I mean, you want to win a World Series and things like that, but there are a part of that, there's also special games, and you were in one of the special games.
That ranks right up there in my career. And I, you know, mine didn't last long, but my playing career, that was a very special moment.
And by the way, Brian was clutch that day, because he drove in his two runs with two outs in the sixth inning. Tim Hewlett got it started with a double that scored Carlton Fisk. Ozzie Guillen drove in Oscar Gamble after that, and then Brian stepped up to the plate, hit a single to right. Hewlett and Salazar, Luis Salazar, scored, and the White Sox won the game 4-1. You know, I got a lot of tweets that were sent in from White Sox fans. I was trying to figure out, you know, hey, how many other people have memories like I do, either being at the game, watching the game, listening to the game, and I got a whole bunch of tweets I want to share some of them with you. John Kelbeck tweeted, "My dad took me too. I believe Seaver was 40. That's correct. And pitched a complete game against a really good Yankees team. Are you kidding me? True professional. Been a handful of other pitchers in the last half century who compare. None any better. Respect." Here's Steve Foley, who tweeted, "I was a 12-year-old at that game with my dad and my great uncle, who was the reason we all became White Sox fans. Great memory. How about this from Pusha J? I was sitting on my grandfather's lap watching the game right as the final out was reached. Grandpa wiped a tear from his eye. Only time I saw him cry. How about that? If you haven't seen, by the way, if you haven't seen this, you got to see it, and you'll maybe really understand why this hit people in so many ways. Because it was Tom Seaver, because he was 40, he went the distance. Look this up on Google, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Now we got Mark Keshtisher from ESPN Radio. It is play-by-play for the NBA, college basketball, college football. Mark tweeted at me saying, I was at that game as well. Phil Rizzuto Day. Seaver pitched a complete game at the age of 40. God bless Tom and his family. My good friend Dave Revson from the Big Ten Network, longtime White Sox fan, he said, I listened to this game on the radio, driving home from my busboy job at My Pie in Wheeling. How Chicago is that? My Pie in Wheeling. He said, I got home just in time for the ninth inning. Bob Napoleon said, I watched every pitch. Still can't figure out why Luis Salazar was starting in the center field that afternoon. Actually, Bob, that year, Luis played a bunch of games in center, about 59 of them. Rudy Law moved from center to left that year, so that's why Salazar was in center. Daniel Kramer, how about this? He said, I remember that Rod Carew also got his 3,000th hit that day, playing for the Angels. Great accomplishments from two great players. How about that? You had a 300th win and a 3,000th hit on the same day. What are the chances? A couple more here. R. Jameson wrote, I live in Tampa, and for the game, I picked up Tony La Russa's father, who I met at a dog track where he worked. We became friends, and we'd watch Sox games in a restaurant. I love the magic of Twitter. The world gets really, really small. That's amazing. And then finally, Paul Ziliak sent me this tweet. My son and I will see the Sox versus the Yankees this April at Yankee Stadium. It's our first visit. We've already agreed we're going to wear our 1980s throwback jerseys in tribute to Seaver's 300th. We'll send you a photo. Paul, please do that. That's awesome. Chris Kampka, I asked him if he had some cool Tom Seaver stats. He said his last season was 1986. Back then, in 86, he had the third most strikeouts of anybody. Nolan Ryan and Steve Carlton were ahead of him. He's the only pitcher to earn his 300th win in a White Sox uniform. He had 61 shutouts in his career, more than Kershaw, Felix Hernandez, Justin Verlander, CeCe Sabathia, and Bartolo Colon combined. He did allow Ron Santo's 300th career home run, and is the oldest pitcher in White Sox history with 10 strikeouts in a game. He did that in 85. 40 years, 239 days. July 14th, 1985, 11 strikeouts at the Orioles for Tom Seaver. Thank you so much, Chris Kampka. Okay, and before we wrap it up, I want to share a story going back to the weekend that I had with my grandfather. So we planned this trip, you know, weeks, maybe even months in advance to see the White Sox play. But the other thing we had to go do was see the Rockettes. That's like a Broadway staple. You go to New York, you got to see the Rockettes perform and dance. So I'm like, okay, I mean, I just wanted to see the White Sox. But yeah, my grandfather wants to go see the Rockettes. We can go see the Rockettes. So I look at the ticket stub, and it says, Disney Summer Magic featuring the Rockettes. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. Rockettes are on the ticket stub. We're good. We go in, and there are kids everywhere. Like, mostly kids were there, younger than me. And I look over at my grandfather. I'm like, are you sure the Rockettes are playing? He goes, yeah, the Rockettes. There they are on the ticket stub. Rockettes are playing. I'm like, all right, fine. Show begins, and here come the Rockettes. They're not singing. They're dancing. They're great for about 2 or 3 minutes. They leave the stage, and then a big screen comes down, and a two-hour cartoon begins to play. And about 5 minutes later, I look over at my grandfather, and he is fast asleep. So what this was a Disney cartoon for 2 hours, and oh, you get the Rockettes for about 2 or 3 minutes. Enjoy. That was my Rockettes experience. I think I fell asleep at some point, too. I wasn't that really into the Disney cartoon, whatever it was. It might have been Bambi. I don't really recall. But I'll tell you this. I do recall what Tom Seaver did on that day. Incredible moment. And, you know, if you haven't seen the video of Seaver throwing his 300th victory, you got to check it out, and you'll understand why people were just so taken by what they saw. A 40-year-old going the distance, winning the game, future Hall of Famer. My thoughts and prayers are to Tom and his family, and a thanks to Tom for giving me a very special life memory that I share with my grandfather and I will never forget. And that's a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage. It's www.wintrust.com/Sox. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.